welcome to PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. Don't let the word man in the title turn you off. This is not a manosphere, maniverse, whatever they call that shit, incel podcast. This is a podcast that has many women on it, as well as many queer people. And, you know, I know that you're upset that the new Silver Surfer is a woman, but you're going to get through it. PCMC is your one-stop shop for non-toxic fandom. Doesn't mean we don't make fun of things and criticize things. But, you know, the new shorthand is... the old shorthand was the 2016 Ghostbusters. The new one will be Snow White. Snow White sucks, not because there's a woman of color in it, but because it's poorly written and poorly executed. That's why it sucks. But I am here with someone who does not suck, Mr. Peter Marsh. He just finished describing his version of The Force Awakens to me. It's been about 6 weeks. We got through it together, and I think it sounds great. Peter, how are you?
I am, I don't even know how to follow any of that up, you know? I'm a straight, cis, white man, in, you know, middle-aged, but yes, I'm not toxic when it comes to fandom. I got my own YouTube shows, and Brian and I, like, on our Comic Books Transform channel, we try to, like, be as positive as we can, even though there's people just, like, ragging on the stuff that we review.
You cover Yellow Jackets, right?
Well, that's on the other channel. That's the
last
with Danny. Yeah, no, it's fine. But that is a show that has gotten a lot of hate recently, too.
I wonder why. Is there ladies in it?
there is that, but the thing is, that's just an example of what you just said, where sometimes the writing, like the choices that they make on a show make it, you know, like where you'd have criticism versus like, oh, well, there's a woman in it. Oh my God, there's a black person in it. Like,
yeah,
you know,
right.
But I don't know, man. It's always a pleasure coming on here and talking to you because, you know, you keep things very positive.
Yes. Or we're going to be positive today. So today's episode is a great idea that Peter had, which was movies that blew our minds. Think about that meme of what's his name? From fucking
Monty Riley.
I have no information today. I'm such an old man. I'm like that thing from that thing. You remember?
Yes. Are you talking about like John C. Riley when he's
yes,
on
from Tim and Eric.
Yes.
Was mind blowing. So
yes.
I asked Peter, what do you mean by that? And you kind of said, blew my mind could be two things. It could be in a cinematic way where the movie itself was like, wow, I didn't know movies could do this. Yeah. But the other was in a sort of existential way where it made you think differently about life or your existence or something. So I thought it was a very cool idea.
Thank you.
I have three on my list, and then I have two honorable mentions.
Okay.
What do you have?
Okay. I only have three, but that's because I just kept the criteria to that first category for me, like movies that really made me like question reality or like, you know, blew my mind in such a way that I kind of questioned things in my life. Like
okay.
I've seen many, many films where they blew my mind as far as like filmmaking goes. There's
right.
many, many examples of that, but there's very, very few movies that I've watched that like had an impact where it made me question my reality.
Well, yeah. So the ones that I have that are cinematic, it's not just movies that are like, oh, wow, they did a cool camera move I've never seen before. Like,
right.
Like these movies that I picked are two movies that are like, it changed my reality in like, oh, it changed me. Like I was one thing before the movie, and then after I was like, oh, I'm a different person now.
Yep. Man, I am excited to hear your choices. I think I have three choices, and here's the thing. Two of them are about as cliche as you could possibly get. I'm already rolling my own eyes at my answers, but there's a reason why I picked these two, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so I would love to... I'll let you start. Tell
okay.
me of a film that blew your mind.
Okay. The most cliche answer. I'm going to start off with that one first, and just start the groaning now and the eye rolling. But The Matrix. Okay, when The
Okay.
Matrix came out, 1999, blew my mind.
Yeah. That's an example. No, I don't think that's a bad example. That I think that feature, to me, that does both. That does both. It's definitely made you think about reality. And I
Yes.
have a similar one to that, but it also made you be like, wow, movies are this as well.
Yes.
So tell
Yes,
me about it.
1000.
Tell me about your experience watching it.
Well, that's what I thought would be the best part about this episode is talking about like our experiences, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that 1999, which two movies from my list are from this year. And I think I might have mentioned this on your show before, but it's always this point that I think is really important. I think that in 1999, I was 16, so you might have been either 15 or 16 as well. And it was such an important year for like everything, but especially movies. And sometimes when I see these like crackpot videos on YouTube and stuff where they're like, the world actually ended in 1999 and all that kind of stuff, I'm like, maybe. Like, it felt like we were moving in a certain direction
Yeah.
in 1999. And then 9/11 comes by and everything artistically, I mean, along with everything else in the world,
Yeah.
changes and 9/11. But I felt like we were going one way, and there was three movies that came out in 99 that just like I can't believe they came out in the same year. Do you think you can
Right.
guess those three?
The Matrix,
That's one of them.
Existence.
No, but that's a very good guess. I've actually never seen Existence either.
It's a similar idea. What's the Troyes movie? Dark City?
Proyas, right? And
Troyes.
then, yeah, Dark City. I think Dark City came out in 98, but
Oh,
once
okay.
again, very similar. It easily could have gone on this list, actually. Dark City.
Well,
Yeah.
okay, tell me what they are.
The other two are American Beauty and Fight Club.
Oh, okay. Yes. Oh, yeah, it was a big year.
Yeah.
It was a big year. You know, I think about it now, like there was a there it was the sort of nadir of that 90s Gen X cynicism. And then when 9/11 happens, you have a sort of new sincerity that comes in. Yeah.
But I feel
Because you
like
yeah.
the current paradigm that we're in, and maybe we're leaving it now, but basically, with 9/11, I felt like we needed escapism. We needed the feeling of like there being heroes out there.
Yeah.
And so that's when the superhero genre just
Yes,
blows up.
absolutely. Yeah.
So we go from like questioning the government, questioning our daily lives, like we do with those three films I just mentioned.
Yeah.
Those are not my three films. Two of them are from the list we just said, but like we're questioning things in the late 90s, and then 9/11 comes, and then we're like, oh yeah, let's just watch Spider-Man swing, oh let's get him.
Yeah.
And literally that became the next 20 something years, and I think we're at the tail end of that now. I don't know.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about the Matrix?
Okay, so I think that the expected thing would be like, I saw The Matrix, and so therefore I'm like, we're in a simulation. But I wouldn't say it's that. I'd say it's more like the messaging, especially like Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus, where he's always asking Neo, like, do you think that's air you're breathing? Why would you have these restrictions? The idea of like the restrictions that you place upon yourself
Yeah.
mentally. That was a big thing for me when I saw this movie. The idea of like you control your reality and you're putting these restrictions on you because you have always believed in these restrictions.
Yeah.
And I think that the movie is very interesting. I mean, when you look up The Matrix and you see the behind the scenes stuff with the Wachowskis, it's just so interesting because like what their lives became was like a direct result of this movie,
Yes,
like
right. They both transitioned after the movie, which is really
Right.
fascinating.
Exactly. And like, I know that with Neo, for instance, I think that they were going to eventually make it to where his avatar in the Matrix was one gender, and then his
Oh.
outside of me. Now, th there definitely was
But
a
Harvey
character.
Weinstein was like, fuck that. Or whoever was involved.
Or Joel Silver, right? He was
Joel
one of the
Silver,
producers.
yeah, right. He reminds me of Weinstein. But let me not say that.
No,
He's
it's okay.
nothing with nothing bad, I don't think, happened with him.
Just a lot of cocaine, I think,
Just a lot of
right?
like a yeah, big fat movie producer.
Right. Well, yeah, and they shut stuff down, but what blows my mind even more is the amount of stuff they allowed to happen in this movie.
Yeah.
The budget they gave the Wachowskis, and then like the subject matter, everything like that. But I was gonna say there's a character in The Matrix, the name is Switch, right? And I believe they're played by an actress. And Switch was at least gonna be like a man in the Matrix and like a woman in the real world, you know?
Interesting. They didn't do that at all.
No,
Even like
no.
Ready Player One with its simplicity does that.
Yeah, but I mean, even that is probably the writer of Ready Player One, because that's from the book, the idea that the character is male, but then they're female in the real world. Like, I'm sure he just took that from like hearing stories about the Matrix, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna make my character, it's nothing profound, you know?
Well, we
Yeah.
also have the idea of catfishing now.
Right,
It
right,
didn't
right.
happen.
Right.
So did
So,
it make you think about gender? Did it make you think about reality?
well, I think the main thing, and this applies to all three of these movies, is it all three of these movies make you think, why do I always think that this is the case? Why do I always think this is the reality? Why do I worry about this? And when you see the movie, you start to think, you know, what am I doing? Like, why am I focused on this so much? You know, have you ever read Sandman by any chance?
No,
Okay.
clearly no.
Well, and see that's kind of a problematic thing to tackle too, because of
Oh,
Neil
because now
Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman's, yeah.
Right. But there's this part, and I think the show's going to come back on Netflix soon, but there's this part where Morpheus or the Sandman goes to hell, right? And there's this guy chained to these rocks, and the guy's doing this little monologue, and he's saying, I was the worst villain in history. I killed all these people. I tore up all these children. I did all this horrible stuff, right? And he's like, and I deserve to be here, to be tormented for eternity. And then Morpheus just basically asks him like a simple question of like, do you really need to be tortured for eternity? And then the guy just kind of thinks for a second, and then he like disappears as if he's been released from
Oh,
hell.
interesting.
And that always had a profound effect on me. And I read Sandman or pretty much around the same time as this, you know, as The Matrix too.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, and also there is cross-pollination too, because there's all this comic book stuff that influences The Matrix as well.
Yeah, for sure. An anime.
Yes. Like Lawrence Fishburne, for example, like his character's name is Morpheus, just like the character in Sandman, and the Wachowskis told him to kind of base his character on that Morpheus from the Sandman comics.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why don't you tell me about the first time you saw The Matrix?
I remember it was a Friday in high school. I remember I said, like, I had heard it was going to be cool, and I was like, oh, let's just check it out. And I just remember being blown away by it cinematically. I mean, the idea of living in a simulation, I think, is so, I think it's intrinsically interesting to people.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get more into that when I talk about one of my choices.
Okay.
I'm gonna all right, let me give you one of mine, okay?
Okay,
This
sure.
is one I gave before as an example. Existenz. Existenz, have you ever seen it?
I have not.
It's a 1999 movie. It's written and directed by David Cronenberg. It's about it came out, I think, months apart from The Matrix. And it's similar. It's about a world where there is video games, but the video games are virtual reality. You actually plug them into your spine. And it like the video game system looks like an organ because it's David Cronenberg. So it looks like an in bullet like an umbilical cord, and you plug it into your spine and you go into a virtual world. But then inside the world, there are games, and you go inside those games, and then it just ends up going like inside. And when I and then it ends, there's this whole like plot of like there are It's a very weird movie, and there's this whole plot of like an espionage plot of like terrorists, and they're called like the realists, and they want to get rid of the video games because they're destroying reality. They say they're crimes against reality, and it ends with they're outside of the game, but then these terrorists come and kill a bunch of people, and there's two people left alive, and they look at each other and they go, "Tell me the truth, are we still in the game?" And that's the end of the movie.
Oh, wow.
So, whereas the Matrix, I don't think the Matrix is by any means simple, but in the Matrix, there is like the real world and then there's the world inside the Matrix. Whereas in this, it's more kind of working off of the philosophy of Jean Baudrillard and simulation and simulacra, which Neo has that book in his thing, but the author of the book doesn't like the Matrix, or he says that the Matrix doesn't get his philosophy correctly. Because the
Okay.
idea is that once you create the simulation, reality is destroyed. And that's what I think is interesting about existence, which is I don't sit around and think, am I literally in a simulation? Am I literally in a computer? I think the
Right.
more philosophical question is, everything is a construct, right? Am I really sitting at a desk, or am I sitting at IKEA's postmodern copy of the idea of a desk?
Yeah.
I used to work at I was used to be a, like years ago I was a waiter, which is like this like restaurant that's there's not a lot left, but anyway, it kind of looks like a diner, but it's not. It's a chain restaurant, and sometimes people try to come in and order off the menu like a diner.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that here. And they'd be like, "But you're a diner." I go, "I'm sorry, we're actually a postmodern simulation of a diner." Like, real diners exist, a copy of the concept of a diner.
Okay.
So, to tell you a little bit of how I watched it, I was high as a kite when I watched Existenz. I saw it at my friend's house. It was actually him and his wife, and it was the three of us, and we smoked some very strong weed, and the movie just sort of washed over us. And literally at the end, when they're like, "Are we still in the game?" and then the movie ends, we were all like, literally, our minds were blown. We were like, "Holy shit! Like, are we in a game? What's
Right.
happening?"
Right.
People often, it's not nearly as well known as The Matrix, but people who know it often put it together with The Matrix because they came out the same year and they have such similar ideas.
Right.
But it's also kind of a sister film to the more famous Videodrome, which was another Cronenberg movie. I know a lot about existence because after that mind-blowing experience, I then went to graduate school and I wrote a paper on existence, and then I
Okay.
actually one of the chapters in my master's thesis is about existence. So I
That's
wrote a
fantastic.
lot about existence and thought a lot about it and read a lot about it. And it's definitely a movie that changed the way I see the world, because it really made me think about this idea of constructs and how subjectivity is a construct and everything is a construct.
Yeah.
I mean, we
Yeah.
live in a construct. Why do we work 5 days when we don't have to? Why do we have, you know what I mean? Like, because we have been, I'd say, for like 30 years, stuck in a time loop. We're stuck. We can't get to the future because we are this simulation of the concept of America that just keeps re replicating itself.
Oh man, that is fucking profound.
This is
considering
PCMC, everybody.
we're recording this at 7:25 my time in Texas, AM. No, I mean, but that's what this type of movie evokes, right? This kind of conversation. I haven't seen it, and now you're making me want to see it, and it has that kind of effect where you're saying like it came out around the same time as The Matrix. We just referenced Dark City. There's this thing that
Yeah.
happens in cinema where like a certain type of movie springs up at the same time. I mean, the obvious answer everyone always references is like Volcano and the other one, Dante's Peak,
Yeah. Or
or
Deep
like
Impact in Armageddon.
Deep Impact and Armageddon. Right. So it's like obviously there's something in the culture where people are like craving a certain movie, or people are excited about making a certain movie, and it comes out, and a few come out at the same time. Like in the 90s, which is kind of funny because you're saying we're stuck in this time loop. The Matrix and I guess Existenz kind of come out just prior to this time loop then, right?
Yeah. And you know, we were getting, I'm not saying, you know, anyway, look, we were getting somewhere philosophically, maybe, and then 9/11 happens and it sort of resets the whole fucking thing.
Exactly.
All of a
Exactly. That's
sudden
what
we're
I'm trying
all
to.
patriotic and jingoistic and, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I think just to kind of bring it back to the Matrix, and then you can kind of weave existence into here too, but it's more than just like the simple concept of like, okay, we're in a simulation and robots run it. They shove so much stuff into the Matrix. It's
Yeah.
ridiculous. There's all these like philosophical references. I mean, you just referenced simulacra or and simulation. I probably said it wrong, but
Simulation and simulacra.
it's okay. But you know that, and then how do you say the author's name?
Jean
Baldr.
Baudrillard.
There you go. Yeah, but like apparently the Wachowskis made that like required reading
Yeah.
when they were filming the movie. Like you had to read that book before you could read the script. But I mean, there's so much stuff where they're just like referencing biblical things, and then they're referencing, you know, Eastern philosophy. So
Have you ever
in
read
terms
that book?
I have not, no.
I haven't read the whole thing, but there is, it begins with a chapter on Disneyland, and
Okay.
it basically says Disneyland is the most real place currently because it's the only place that tells you it's not real. Like Central
That
Park is a created park that's created to look like nature, and while you're in it, you believe it's nature, but it's not, it's a simulation. In Disneyland, when you see the fake buildings and the fake street, it at least tells you this is a simulation. That's their idea. So that's the kind of thing that it's about.
Interesting. Okay. Am I allowed to tell a real quick story?
Sure.
Okay. So a lot of this stuff that we're talking about today involves a movie theater that I worked in Staten Island,
Yeah.
right? And I knew all these awesome people, and I saw these movies with certain people too, right? Anyway, there was one guy that I worked with who was really well spoken. He was very intelligent. He was destined for greatness, but he was kind of condescending. He was a real condescending guy. I'm not going to say his name, because some people might actually know him on here. But I remember, you know, I was a huge Star Wars fan. 1999 is also when The Phantom Menace comes out.
Yeah.
So I'm always talking about Star Wars. And the guy like comes up to me at one point and he says, Pete, like you're really into Star Wars. And I'm like, okay, this doesn't seem like a condescending comment yet. And he's like, oh no, you're really into Star Wars where you think that like you're going to be a Jedi and like go on a mission and stuff like that. And I think that had a profound impact on me because I'm like, yeah, I am a little delusional like that. But the reason why I bring that up is because I think that certain people see movies like The Matrix, like Existence, and other things on our list, and they like take it as like they're going to go on a personal quest. I see The Matrix, and then I truly do think that I'm in a simulation.
Yeah.
And I think that you and I are so realistic and so cynical that we don't do that. But movies have that impact on people.
They're,
And
yeah.
good.
They're the perfect medium for it. Right? Because movies are reflections, recreations, constructions of reality. That's why when you look at, and here's the film professor in me coming out, when you look at European cinema of the mid 20th century to late 20th century, and you look at art films and stuff, it's almost always very formalistic and playing with the concept and elements of cinema because American cinema and Hollywood cinema is always so trying to get you to buy into the reality of it and therefore buy into capitalists' ideals that you know, you have things like the French New Wave where there's all these weird jump cuts. It's constantly reminding you this is a construction, this is a movie. So to have movies are almost the perfect medium to have these kind of conversations.
And it's funny because you and I have talked a lot about David Lynch recently, and you know, David Lynch has just been on my mind. I love David Lynch, and you know, he died just a couple months ago at this point. But I think of him when I think of that. And there's many David Lynch movies that could have easily got on this list, but it's because it fits into that other category that you mentioned before of like,
Yeah.
you know that movies could do this, you
But
know?
you know what? When thinking about this category, the idea of like things like The Matrix and Existence, I might put Mulholland Drive there because I think Mulholland Drive is kind of it's like a movie that's a parody of a movie or pastiche of a movie. And there's even that scene where she's auditioning with the guy, and they're like the guy with the gray hair, and they're like in the scene, and it kind of becomes real in that moment. I think that's a moment of like, where what is reality?
Right, and but that's the beauty of filmmaking in itself, right? Because just the way that it's filmed, like that scene, for example, it makes you question, like, why do I always just take this for granted? Why do I always think this is the case, right? And that's what I think that the main subject of our discussion here today is, like, when movies make you question why you always think things a certain way. And I love movies where, like, they show you kind of like the cliche that you're expecting, but then it's like there's something wrong about this. This isn't right, you know, that, you know, we think this is the case, you know. So I mean, Lynch could have easily gone on there.
Give
And
me your number, give me another one. Give me your number one from your list.
all right, so here comes the next super cliche one, but this is so important. This movie gave me that effect that you described watching Existence, but I was not on drugs. When I saw Fight Club for the first time, that like blew my mind. But
Of course.
so obviously, like, spoilers and stuff, but like I remember very specifically when like the notes started playing for the Pixies' Where Is My Mind at the very end, and I just was like, what the fuck? A bomb just went off in my head, you know?
And I mean,
Good.
going about thinking back to what we were just talking about, how like, and then 9/11 happens and we all get sort of Djangoistic again. That movie ends with destroying the credit card companies and freeing people from credit card debt.
It like takes such a turn. And he okay, so Fight Club needs context as well. I'm working in that movie theater. I went to go see American Beauty with this girl that I thought was really cute in high school, and I'm like, oh man, I'm having this like deep date with this girl. I mean, she definitely didn't think it was a date, but like, you know, like, oh, this is amazing. And I leave American Beauty, which had been out for like a couple of weeks. I see two of my friends that work in the movie theater, and they're like, we're going to see Fight Club. You want to come with us? And I just go in line and go watch Fight Club with them,
You just
right?
leave the girl.
I think I left the girl. I think the girl went home, and I went to go watch Fight Club with a bunch of dudes, which I think is probably very appropriate, right? And I remember that, like, we were always talking about how we didn't know what the movie truly was about because we didn't have this sort of like social media and the internet, like, where, you know, and none of us had read the book yet. So we thought like it had to do with like a heist or something. And then it's just this fucking movie where it just starts off right away talking about how ridiculous we are for being slaves to capitalism. And then it eventually turns into this like revolutionary thing for like the third act.
You know what's funny? I do like Fight Club a lot, but I think Fight Club influenced, and The Matrix 2 in some ex to some extent influenced a lot of like shitty people online that don't. I feel like a lot of people don't get what Fight Club is about entirely. Like, yes, a lot of the rhetoric Tyler Durden is saying is true, but he's also manipulating people. It's also about how like good intentions become fascism very quickly. And I feel like a lot of bros don't. This is kind of like a bro movie in some extent. They're like, yeah, Tyler Durden, this is the smartest movie ever. Tyler Durden. And they
Yes.
like, you kind of like, well, do you get that Tyler Durden's not great person?
Right. Well, Mike, I mean, that's kind of my secret manipulative thing I did here is I was like, how can I bring my soapbox onto PCMC? And like, that's what this subject is, right? Because like, you bring up the Matrix again, right? The Matrix is one of the things that they would reference with the Columbine killers because
Oh,
they wore
yeah.
those trench coats. There's that sort of that slaughter scene in the Matrix in the lobby where, you know, they're just walking around just mowing down cops that are there that like obviously are kind of just innocent people plugged into the Matrix, but like they're saying that's an influence on the Columbine people. Like I feel like our current world that we live in is just run by trolls. Like it's a troll run world, right? And I feel like Fight Club and I guess the Matrix too, they're like elixirs for the trolls. Like they empower the trolls, unfortunately, you know?
I think no, yeah. I mean, the whole red pill, blue pill thing has become such a big part of like online rhetoric.
Right. I mean, there's so much of Fight Club. When you watch Fight Club, you're like, oh my God, I've been hypnotized by capitalism. I can't believe I care about all this stuff. I need to be liberated. And that is the problem. That's what I think, like, a lot of people on the other political side of the spectrum from us take Fight Club, and they're like, well, we have to be men. Like, there's so many lines in Fight Club where, like, Tyler Durden says something like, you know, we don't have a great war to fight. And they talk about it in, like, terms of, like, oh, that's too bad we don't have a great war. But, you know, like a regular person would be like, good, we don't have a great war.
Yeah, I mean, as like he's spouting a lot of anti-capitalist rhetoric, but he's also completely toxic and completely toxic masculinity. I mean, just the idea that you have to find yourself through fighting. Yeah, but I think I've never read the book, but I've read a bunch of other books by Palahniuk, and my sense was always that the film didn't get the satire of the book. There's a comedy that goes through Palahniuk that I think the film doesn't totally get.
His work is so, like, cynical and dark, and far more disturbing than any movie adaptation of any of his work, including Fight Club, you know. And I read a lot of his books around the time that I saw Fight Club. Like, once I saw Fight Club, like, okay, I'm gonna read Survivor and Invisible Monsters and all this other stuff. And it is a sense of, like, people didn't get the message exactly, and or the wrong people got the wrong message. But so then I was going to say to you, what's your second choice?
So this one is, I guess, more of a cinematic one, but it did have blow my mind in a real way. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974. So I've talked about this before the show. The first time I ever heard of it was on there was this TV show. We covered it for a Halloween episode a few years ago. It was like I forget what it was called, but it was like the Horror Awards, and they did a segment talking about Texas Chainsaw, and I never heard of it before. But the way it was shot with that Super 8 film and natural light, it felt like a documentary. Like, I was a little kid and I thought it was a documentary. And I said to my dad, I talked to my dad about it, and he was like, "Oh, I saw that when I was a teenager. It was the scariest movie I ever saw. I couldn't believe when I saw it." So I was like, "Oh, wow." And I used to go to the video store every day because I had no friends and I was just this little nerd that would just rent movies every day. And it was there, and I saw it, and I was like, and I watched horror. I watched all the Nightmare on Elm Streets. I watched all the Friday 13th, all the Child's Plays. But I was afraid of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, not just because I thought it was scary. I was literally like, it was too much. Like, it made me think the world is a worse place. Like when you're a little kid, you learn something. Like, maybe the first time you learn about a big crime in the news, and you're like, oh wow, the world is a darker place than I thought it. I knew it could be a moment ago. I was really, it seemed like dangerous, this movie. But eventually I did get up the nerve to rent it. And by the way, this is the 90s, kid. So nobody stopped me. Nobody stopped like an 8-year-old kid renting Texas Chainsaw Massacre for $2. They were like, sure, have a good time, kid. Be sure to rewind it. So I went home and I watched it. And it begins with a fake, like, it's not a warning, but it's a narration by Jean Larroquette, actually, from Night Court, but he's doing an impression of Orson Welles, but it's trying to like make it sound like it's real, and it's like, on this date this happened, and that alone was like, oh my God, I'm watching reality. I was a dumb kid. I somehow thought it was real, and I was like, I'm watching reality. I'm watching this horrible shit, and it's so violent and it's so visceral. I was just like, I was. It was more, it's mind-blowing because it was more than scary. It was like, oh my God, the world could be this way. You know what I mean? There's a such thing as people who eat people. You know what I mean? Think about the first time you ever heard the idea of cannibalism. You're like, oh my God, like that's crazy. So that was a big one for me. It really blew my fucking mind as a little kid.
No, it's excellent that you bring that up, because that is a great point that I never even thought of for this episode. It's just, like, how it could change your perspective on the world. of like, maybe things are scary or maybe things are worse,
Yeah.
like you were talking before about how movies are so good as like a device to put ideas into people's heads. I think I've heard before a movie being called like an empathy machine, where like movies create
Yeah.
empathy in us because they put us in other people's shoes. But sometimes when you see horror movies like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you feel cynical about the world because you think, oh, another person thought of this too. Like another, like, because A, there's people that like came up with this and filmed this, but then there are people that want to see this. And I think that like I think like a modern equivalent of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is probably the Terrifier movies, right?
Which I've seen none of them, by the way.
Okay, right. But like the Terrifier movies sometimes bother me because I'm like, oh, there's people that seek this out, that like want to see this. And that itself is unsettling.
No, I agree. I agree. And there's no I like Terrifier. There's no like irony in. That's why the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is so interesting, because it's a complete 180 and goes into irony and is like really funny. But the first one has no irony. It's got no winking. It really feels raw. It really you everything about it feels so real. It was terrifying as a kid. It was like, oh my God, like I'm watching real people die. I'm watching this horrible thing. How is this thing allowed to exist?
Yeah, well, it's funny too, as like a guy who lives in Texas, and I actually live not even like an hour away from where that was filmed. Like you can go to that place. It's a restaurant called Hooper's now, and you can get food
Oh, that's
there, right?
fun.
I haven't gone yet, but I live like less than an hour away. Anyway, but it makes you worried about the world too. Like you see a movie like that, you see like The Hills Have Eyes, and you think, okay, if I go out into a rural area, people are going to slaughter me and my loved ones. Yeah.
Give me your
No, I
third
mean,
one, sir.
okay. Well, I think though that we should kind of take note too, and I'm definitely going to my third one, but every one of these movies is made by a super famous filmmaker, right? David Fincher,
So far.
Cronenberg, what's his face? Texas Chainsaw, Tobe Hooper, right? And then what was my first one? It was The Matrix, Wachowskis, right?
Super
Well, so,
fan.
okay. So my third one is the least cliche out of the three. It was actually going to be made by another amazing, amazing filmmaker. It was going to be George Miller was going to originally direct this, and he was going to have Uma Thurman be the lead, but then eventually became Robert Zemeckis, and Jodie Foster is the lead. And I'm talking about Contact.
Oh, you know, I've sadly never seen this. It's
Okay.
based on a book by
Carl Sagan.
Sagan, Carl Sagan, right?
So this is actually the movie that made me think of this subject for us. And this came out in 1997, so I'm younger, I'm 14. I remember I go to see it with my parents in a theater in New Jersey. And I can single-handedly say that this, I can say sing that single-handedly this movie ended my belief in Christianity.
What a milestone.
I mean, obviously I was at a questioning age, but I sat and I watched this movie, and it is just like chock full of philosophical debates, like religion versus science. That's the whole idea of the movie. And I think that the end result is that they want you to think that you can have religion and society, science together. But then I ended up having a different reaction.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so you've never seen it.
No. I've seen, that one shot, the mirror shot, that's very famous. I've seen that plenty of times, but I haven't seen it. No. I want to, and I've always wanted to read the book as well. I always think
Have you
it's
ever?
fascinating when someone who's not a fiction writer writes a book. Like someone like Carl Sagan, who's like an astronomer and a scientist, and then he's like, let me write a fiction, but I think that's always so interesting.
Yes. Well, the behind the scenes is kind of interesting too. Contact was originally supposed to be a movie before it was a novel. And in 1980, they tried to make the movie. It was Carl Sagan and his partner at the time. And they were trying to make it into a movie in the 80s. And then eventually, over time, just things kept falling through. He made it into a novel. But it's funny, when Contact came out, I remember that this is when like science fiction movies and stuff were like really big, and there was a lot of different magazines and stuff you can get where you're like, oh, this movie's coming out, like this Jurassic Park sequel's coming out.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing like the artwork and stuff, or not the artwork, like the photos from the movie and stuff, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a really big movie. And I think it was marketed to be such a thing, but it's not like an action movie at all.
Right,
It's
right.
this like movie where it's just 95% of it is just debate about reality.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you were
It's
how old when you saw it?
14.
14. Wow, that's such an interesting age. Had you so had you had you at that before seeing the film, had you begin to think like, is there a God? Does this make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I was always bothered going to church, how like everyone seems very like programmed and everyone's saying stuff at the same time. I'm like,
Yeah.
this just feels weird. It's always felt weird to me, you know, just kind of going through the motions. And so I always questioned things then. And then there were things that didn't make sense as far as like suffering in the world. Like, why is this the case? Like, this doesn't add up with what's going on. But this movie does the thing where many movies have done afterwards, where they try to like explain miraculous things with science. They try to explain like, oh, well, that's just people having this kind of physical response versus it being some kind of profound spiritual thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Matthew McConaughey is in this movie. It's one of the first movies I saw him in, and he plays a preacher, and like him and Jodie Foster like fall in love and they have a relationship throughout the movie. But like he's basically trying to like disprove you know, this idea of alien life. They're trying to contact alien life. Yeah. And like what's interesting about the movie too is that they make this device after they get this signal from outer space. They make this device that's going to have Jodie Foster travel to where the aliens are, and it costs billions and billions of dollars. It's like this big gigantic project. It takes, you know, so long to make it, and then the machine that's going to take her gets destroyed by like a Christian radical.
Interesting. Oh, I really want to watch this. I have to
Well,
watch. I
did
gotta watch this. I've gotta watch this. It's always been on my list. Today's gotta be the day that I do it.
Okay. Well, did you
So,
watch Patrick Willem's special on Robert Zemeckis? Did you ever watch his
yes,
video
I
on
did
Robert?
see that. Yeah.
I think just like watching that video, I think would make you want to watch any kind of Robert Zemeckis movie,
Yeah,
you know?
especially well, the early ones.
Right. Well, and it does have that really crazy fucking shot that you referenced where she's
Yeah.
like running towards the mirror, but it's this continuous shot. It's so
Yeah.
crazy.
It's like a Mobius strip of a shot. It's crazy.
Right. So then what about your third one?
Let me give you my last one, but I actually have two honorable mentions that I just want to say.
Okay.
And then because I didn't want to put them on the list. One is Star Wars, just because I saw it as a little kid, but I didn't really get it. And then I saw it again when I was like 13, and it would have came out on VHS in 96. And it was Star Wars. I was like, oh my God. And it was like, I remember watching it and being like immediately bitten by it. But I don't want to put it, I felt cliche to put it on the list. I've talked about Star Wars so much. The other is a movie I don't know the name of. It's the first porno I ever watched. It
Ah.
was in my older brother's room. He had like a VHS and I watched it. And I remember like I put it on and it wasn't a porno yet. It was just like two like people that were like backstage at a play, like they were playing Romeo and Juliet. And then the guy was just like, so I remember it. The guy was like, oh, anyway, you should suck my dick. And then she sucks his dick. And my mind was blown. I was like, oh my God. So the first porno, whatever that was. So then, but my final is, and it's funny, there's so much genre on the, and so much 90s here. My final is Scream from 1996.
Wow.
It wasn't just an amazing movie. Well, number one, I had a huge crush on Neve Campbell, afterwards, but it was so postmodern that, I mean, not in the existence sense, but in a sort of like poppy sense of like they just talked about other movies and stuff. So I would go and sort of watch other movies from that were mentioned in Scream. And I was like, oh, I'm like the Randy. I thought like, oh, I'm like the Randy character. I'm someone who knows a lot about movies. And that was the first time I was like, oh, I always loved movies, but that was the first time I was like, oh, like I really love movies. Like maybe I want to make movies. Maybe like it I saw and I saw it 5 times in the theater as a like a kid, you know what I mean? As like a 13-year-old, just
Yeah.
me and my friend saw it over and over and over. We just kept watching it for like, you know, like every couple of days, we're like, oh, we gotta go see it again. It was so mind-blowing to us. That I still like the series. So yeah, Scream.
Excellent, excellent choice. And I think it just kind of fits in with everything that we're talking about today because movies in general, you expect a certain thing from them. You expect characters to say certain lines of dialogue. You expect certain things to happen by a specific act.
Yeah.
And when movies break that rule, when they do things that you're not expecting, it just blows your mind and
Yeah.
it just sort of leaks into the rest of your life because you're like, oh, they were able to break the rules and it worked out.
Yeah.
So like, can we break the rules in our reality? Like,
And that first scene, you know, you go in thinking Drew Barrymore is the star of this movie, and then she dies in the first scene in that very crazy way before even the credits, before the title. I mean, that was mind blowing. I mean, the seeing now you go into a Scream movie, you're like, oh, what's the first scene gonna be? Like, and now the last couple have been like, how do you play with that? Like, Scream 4 was like they just kept doing it. It was like a scene within a scene within a scene. Like, and then the last one, Sticks, was like somebody dies and then we follow the killer and then somebody kills the killer. Spoiler alert. So like now they keep like trying to figure out ways to redo it. But that first one that you didn't expect it, it was like, holy shit, what is this movie gonna be? Yeah.
No, and I think the most novel thing about Scream is that they reference horror movies left and right. And it's like, hey, they know about this stuff. Like,
Right.
because one of the biggest cliches about horror movies is that like people don't realize they're in a horror movie, and so they make all these
Right.
mistakes that you get frustrated with them as the audience, but in this movie, it's like they have just as much knowledge as we do.
Yeah, and we're so used to that now, but in 1996, the fact that they would be in, they were a horror, it's a horror movie, but they're talking about other horror movies and they're like, oh, this is like that movie, and you're like, holy shit, like that was mind blowing, you know. Even now, and when you, by the way, when you've seen movies now that pretend like other movies don't exist, it's hilarious to us. Like if you watch like the first Twilight, she like Googles vampires like she'd never heard of a vampire before.
Oh, God.
It's so funny. Whereas, like, if you see, did you see Abigail?
I have not.
In Abigail, there's a little girl vampire, and they're like, oh, this is like Buffy rules, or like this, oh, this is like Dusk Till Dawn rules. Like, they're constantly referencing other vampire movies as a way for them to understand the situation they're in. That really started with Scream.
Yes. Actually, I did see Abigail. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I thought you were talking about Megan for a second, but yeah, I've seen Abigail. Yeah, that was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah.
No, but like, I mean, that's the part that like just blows my mind about Scream is that like for instance, you know how they made that joke, Matthew Lillard like goes, "I'll be right back."
Yeah,
Like,
yeah,
is
yeah.
it like when you say, "I," to this day, I don't say "I'll be right back" if I'm going somewhere in my dark house.
Yeah,
I'm like,
right.
what can I say besides I'll be right back before I go to this other room,
Yeah.
but it's such a good movie, and it came out, I guess, like what, 96?
Yeah.
So I would have been like 14 as well, or yeah, like 13, 14. Such a huge impact, and it impacted horror movies forever after that too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was, and it came after like there had been like a gulf of horror, like there hadn't been any good horror for a little while in the mid-90s. Not since like Candyman in like what 92 or something, like or whatever it was. And then and it brought back the slasher in a big way.
Yeah, there's so many movie posters that look just like the original Scream poster.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah,
Not
it's
the one of Drew Barrymore where she's all white, and I think her eyes are blue, but like the one where it's like just the cast and it says Scream on the bottom.
yeah.
There's so many movie posters like that from that time
Oh
period.
yeah. Oh yeah. I loved with the what is it, part five, the first one with Jenna Ortega. They did something so smart, which was they had a poster like that, but the tagline of the poster said, "The killer is on this poster," which is so funny because they know the game of Scream. The game of Scream is who's the killer gonna be? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because if someone came up to us or if someone's looking at your show right now, they'd be like, oh, what movies did they say blew their minds? And they might think we might say something like real pretentious, or they might be like, okay, what's the most cliche ones? But I think that like everything we've said, like so many people from our age would say,
Yeah,
you
I
know?
agree. Yeah.
But it's because these movies, regardless of like how deep you want to take them, just watching them is one of those sort of like milestone moments in your life, you know?
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead, go ahead.
As a father, have you seen your kids have their minds blown by things that you would not have thought that's what blew their mind? Like, you would not have guessed this is going to blow their mind, and it did?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. Yes. And actually it excites me because I think that
Yeah.
my 14-year-old has more depth than I do. You know, and I'm 42. I took her to see The Matrix, for instance, and that had an impact on her. She's, you know, it's funny when you're a parent, you kind of cherry pick what you're going to show your kid and when. Like,
Yeah.
okay, I'm going to show her Terminator 2 here. I'm going to show her Aliens here. I'm going to show her in The Matrix, right? But she has really taken to like classic literature, and
Oh,
yeah, my kid is much more mature than I. Like, you know,
wow.
she's like, you know, Jane Eyre, and I mean, she reads a whole bunch of stuff all the
Yeah,
time,
wow,
but like
good.
that stuff, like, you know, what the fuck is the one where they're on the island and their kids and the,
Lord
you
of the
know,
Flies.
Lord of the Flies, like Lord of the Flies had like an impact on her, and like, what's her face, the one who wrote The Lottery,
Oh, Shirley Jackson.
yeah, Shirley Jackson has had an impact on my kid. So like
That's awesome.
the stuff that should have an impact on you has had an impact on my kids.
Does she like horror?
She loves horror. She
That's
loves
cool.
Scream.
That's
It's
cool.
funny, just kind of bring it back to Scream. Like, Scream seems to be the thing that I can always connect with people on. Like,
Yeah,
oh,
it's interesting, right?
yeah. I think that if you're from a certain generation, you love Scream. I think it just like it had such an impact, you know?
Yeah, but I think it endures. Young people keep watching Scream. I think that's why they keep making them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
There's
it's
something.
funny. You'll
There's
see
something.
like an interview with like Jenna Ortega from the new ones, and she'd be like, "Oh yeah, I saw Scream when I was like 6 years old, and I loved it. I'm so happy I'm in a Scream movie." And you kind of
Yeah.
like blows your mind, like. Can you imagine you grew up with it and then you're in it? It's crazy.
I know. It's like when people are in Star Wars movies, like Ewan McGregor and stuff, and they're like,
Yeah.
oh, I watched it as a kid. Yeah. No, I know. I don't know. What do you think of our picks?
It's funny that you say that because I do teach film classes and I do have studied film for a long time. So I sometimes have to fight myself. There's a struggle inside me sometimes with these lists because there's part of me that will want to pick something popular, but then I think, oh well, there's nothing unique about that. But then there's part of me that wants to be pretentious and show how smart I am, but I have to fight that too because there's no value in that. So you kind of I'm kind of always struggling between, like, and when I came up with this list, I looked at them, I'm like, oh well, two are horror and none of them are from this century. But I was like, you know
Right.
what? This is what my list is. I it is what it is. You know what I mean? We don't have to impress anybody with our lists.
Yeah, it's funny. The people I keep referencing this movie theater, but that's what happens when you work at a place like a movie theater. You meet like real creative, interesting people, right?
Yeah.
And I saw these movies with some of these people that I'm talking about here. But I remember another guy that worked there, he once talked about Metallica's Black Album. And he's like, oh, isn't it really interesting that we all had a big, it impacted us so much. And he talks about all the songs in it. And he kind of talks about how, like, all the songs, the ideas behind them, like, influenced our way of thinking. And I think that, like, with these movies that we've referenced, if we had not seen these movies, I think we would be different people. And that seems so, like, fleeting and, like, so dramatic, but it's true,
Oh,
you know?
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That to me, like that's sort of that's at the ethos of what PCMC is to me, is that it's like media and art and movies are the things that like construct us. It's the stuff that we're made of. So it's important. And I feel almost like on a re and I'm not a religious person. I'm a deeply atheistic. But if I had a religion, it would be this stuff. It would be, but not in the sense that I believe it. But like you look at Doctor Who and you go, what are the values that Doctor Who shows? Like, are those values that are meaningful to us? The act of consuming media sort of creates you in a way.
And therefore there would have been movies that I would have put on this list that are like, these blew my mind and these shaped me into who I am. Like I remember like the Transformers, the movie when I was a kid, you know, like that blew my mind. I was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old. I distinctly remember going to the movie theater, what, off of like 35, I think, in Staten Island, the UA, right? And like Forest Avenue. Maybe I'm fucking them up, or Travis. I think it was at Travis. But you know, I remember seeing the original 1989 Batman with Michael Keaton. I remember seeing that and like the, what it was like walking in the parking lot after seeing that. Like that obviously had an impact on me as a person.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, there's with all of these lists that we do on PCMC, there's always more that can be done. PCMC is like Saturday Night Live. You kind of work on it for a little while and then it's out there and then you just move on to the next one. We're almost at
Shit, yeah.
400 episodes.
Fuck yeah, man. That is awesome.
But Pete, thank you so much for being here. I think this was a really fun episode.
Thank you.
We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.